I Suck at Dating with Dean, Vanessa, and Jared, an iHeartRadio podcast.
What is up, sucky daters? It is Dean Unglert, and I am back in studio. It is September 16th, I believe. I'm here with Mark Easton, Jared, and Vanessa. We have a very special episode for you guys. We have Nicole Lappin, who is the author of Boss Bitch. Boss Bitch? Can
well,
I say bitch?
The new book is, yeah, you can. It's her book.
But the newest one that she just wrote is Becoming Superwoman, and she is, in my eyes, a superwoman. A space between the words, as she likes to put it. She's not Superwoman, but she is a superwoman. We're going to talk to her. We're going to talk to Neve and Laura from Catfished a little later on. I'm sure you guys have seen that show on MTV. Basically, they just go out and find people who have been catfished. And Neve was actually the very first person to be a to have gotten catfished. So we're going to talk to them a little bit. But before we do that,
wasn't the first person ever to get catfished. I mean, people have gotten, it's his first person.
By the term.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah,
exactly. Under the term.
So by the term, they coined the term catfish, and then they made a documentary about Neve getting catfished. And then that documentary spun off a couple of years later into Neve hosting the show Catfished on MTV, which I'm sure you've all seen. I don't really watch television, but I've seen that show. So I've seen it.
Yeah, it's great.
Sure, we've all seen it.
I think it's neat to make up a phrase that becomes part of the language.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm curious to talk to more to them more about that, because I don't believe that they've invented the phrase, you know?
You don't?
How could they have done that? You don't just go out and do that.
I have it. Like John Hine. He's the guy that invented jump the shark and the concept of jumping the shark. And now everybody says jump the shark.
Never heard anyone say jump the shark in my life.
Wow.
I can't be the only one. You heard that?
Yes, I've used it before.
Use it to me. Give it to me.
Well, the premise originally was, when does a TV show jump the shark? Like, for example, on Happy Days, when the Fonz used his motorcycle to jump a shark, that show wasn't good anymore. It's when a TV show stops being cool and exciting and fun. And every TV show has that moment.
Is it because when you're on the other side of the shark, it's like, what's interesting?
It's often when you add a younger, cuter cast member, when there's a marriage on the show, it's like after that, the excitement and newness of the show is gone and it's not as fun as it used to be. Like, name a show. Name a show.
The Office.
Jump the shark.
Ooh, wow.
I was trying to think of that in my head when you guys were telling me about what it was.
Yeah.
Because there might be a couple moments when they jump the shark.
Probably when Jim and Pam
get married.
Yeah, finally get together.
Or then when Michael leaves.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, that's a definite shark jump.
If the shark wasn't jumped by then.
Yes.
You know, it's
definitely
the moment.
Definitely.
Okay.
And usually that's it. Main characters getting together, main character leaving, new character coming. These are all shark jumps. But anyway.
You guys are business. What's the word I'm looking for?
Men?
Businessmen. Business casual.
No. You guys are in the scene. You guys are in the Hollywood world more than I am, so you just know it better than me, I think.
Well, they're not here, so we could say that this podcast jumped the shark when we added Jared and Vanessa. I mean, I think we all could agree on that.
Yeah, and then again when Dean grew the mustache.
The mustache for sure. Yeah. That's the real jump the shark moment.
Yeah.
Nice.
But anyway, that's become something as a phrase. People use it to describe not just TV shows, but all kinds of things. But anyway, we digress.
Yeah, what were we talking about?
We're talking about catfishing and how that became in the zeitgeist.
Gotcha. Anyways,
we haven't had a van update in a while.
We'll talk to them later. Yes, let's give a van update for now. So Jared and Vanessa, they're running late as usual. So they're going to jump in a little bit later on. But I guess in the meantime, I'll just tell you guys about my life. And obviously the van has been a pretty central figure in Bachelor in Paradise this season.
Mm-hmm.
More so than I ever expected it to be. I'm surprised I'm getting as much screen time as I am, because It's just so funny to me. But yeah, the van has been going well. I did the van full time as of, I think it was the end of May, so we're right around 3 months now.
Wow.
Maybe
wow.
A little longer. But again, I travel internationally a lot, so it's kind of nice to like not have to pay rent while I'm gone. But the van itself is doing well. I've had to get some work done on it, which has been frustrating. It's like I'm saving $2,000 a month on rent, but just last week I had to get $1,000 worth of work done on getting a computer chip reinstalled on it. You know what I mean?
So is it a newer van? I forget.
It's a 2006. So I mean, not really new.
Okay.
But, you know, it's got 70,000 miles on it. So not many miles. It's a diesel engine. So it runs forever. And it's a Sprinter cargo van. So it's made for distance. And so it shouldn't break down often. But when it does, it's a Mercedes. So it's expensive to fix.
What are some disadvantages you found that maybe you didn't anticipate? Other than maintenance on the van, just in day-to-day life?
Well, when I'm living in the van, I'm not in Los Angeles. So I haven't really run into anything that I dislike about that.
Where do you park this thing?
right now it's parked on the street.
Is that how it, when you're asleep in it, are you usually on a street somewhere?
Well, so that's the thing. When I'm sleeping in it, I'm not in Los Angeles. I'm somewhere more rural. And so I can like sleep in a campsite area, or, you know, I've slept in Oregon a couple times on like literally just like on the side of the road, but the road is like, it's a frontage road. So there's no houses around. No houses, not much traffic going on. And like, there's these long roads that you're on. There's a lot of like semi trucks that pull over and sleep on the side of the road as well. And so I'll just basically like join them as like the little brother, you know, because I'm like a little baby compared to them.
Is there a website you can go to see where it's okay to park a car overnight?
There is. Yeah. I've never been on it and I don't know what it's called, but I know that they exist.
So far you're just doing it on your own.
Yeah. And
out.
I haven't run into a single issue. And so I think until I run into an issue, I'll probably
no police
start.
Have come say, hey, move it along.
No one's ever knocked. So I was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming last month, visiting my brother. And we were like climbing mountains and stuff out there. And I was basically just sleeping. It's funny, actually, I spent 7 days in Jackson Hole. No, like 5 days in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And my brother has a house there. And I didn't go in his house one time. I just basically lived in my van out in his front yard. Until the very end, I think I just like had a poop or something. So I went into his house.
Well, that's an issue.
Yeah. Anyways. And one morning he woke up, I woke up to someone banging on the window. And I was like, well, this is the first time I've ever been woken up to someone like trying to bang on the window. And I was like, someone probably is telling me to like move my van. I parked illegally, or someone's like trying to, you know, scare me or something like that. And it turns out it was just my brother trying to wake me up so he can go hiking for the day. But I've never had an issue. And it's funny because I sleep with a gun right next to my bed. I have a safe for it, but I typically, right before I go to sleep, I take it out of the safe. I have the magazine and the actual gun itself separated from each other, from like one at the head, one at the toe. So it's like, I don't make a mistake at night, you know?
Yeah.
And hopefully like in a sleepy stupor, if I needed to, I could find them both and put them together and cock it. And if I need to use it, I use it.
I mean, just picking it up is probably intimidating enough, right? If someone comes in, you just pick, even if there's no magazine in it.
It's a good point.
I know.
But I hope I don't ever have to shoot anyone, obviously, but like it's good peace of mind to have.
Yeah.
And it feels cool to hold. Like it's a gun, dude.
It's like a handgun, right?
It's a Glock 9mm.
All right.
It's very capable of murdering someone.
Yeah.
There were times I was hiking through Yellowstone, actually. And Yellowstone has these watch out for grizzly bears signs plastered everywhere. Like grizzly bears, you know, obviously they can kill someone. Yeah. And there were multiple times where I didn't hike with my gun because I think it's probably illegal, but people carry bear mace with them all around. And there were multiple times where I was like, I should probably have my gun on me right now, which is just a cool thing to think about. Like, yeah, I got a gun. I should probably have it on me right now.
Was getting the gun any issue there?
Blown away by how simple it was to get this gun. Literally, I think it was after this podcast a couple months ago, I just walked across the street. There's a gun emporium there. And I took this test and they're like, or no, I walked in. I was like, hey, I want to buy a gun. I live in a van and I need to protect myself. And they go, great. Take this test. Once you pass the test, we'll go pick out which one you want.
Is that the background check? Is that the test?
No, it's a multiple choice 30 question test. And I go, sure. But just so you guys know, like I've never studied about guns. I know nothing about guns. I don't think I'm ready to take a test. And they go, you got this. You're fine. You're going to be fine. Take the test. Ace the test. No, I think I got one question wrong and it was like an ambiguous, like there were multiple right answers and they talked me through it, whatever. Picked out the gun. 10 days later, I come back and I pick up my gun and I got a gun and I took it to the shooting range, practiced with it, took it apart, cleaned it. So yeah, got a gun.
Wow. Do you know that it's, I hear that it's legal to sleep in Walmart parking lots. Have you taken advantage of that at all?
So that's actually, that's a changed rule. I don't think it's legal anymore, but they don't enforce the law. So it's technically not, maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe it's still legal, but it's not advertised by Walmart, mm-hmm. who used to advertise it because people would like set up camp there for multiple days. And then Walmart then becomes like liable for things that might happen in their parking lots for people that sleep there. I've never personally slept in a Walmart parking lot. I don't know. Van life's been great. Everyone's been very critical of it, but I love it.
You mentioned pooping. You do poop in the van, right?
You have a bathroom on there.
No, there's no toilet in there. I've been thinking about getting a toilet. Well, my thing is I want to try living in it for, you know, weeks at a time and seeing if I need a toilet, I'll get a toilet, but I haven't.
So really, what are you doing? Starbucks and like just public bathrooms, gas stations, yeah. McDonald's.
Yep. Exactly that. I have a bucket that I pee in every once in a while. If I need like, let's say you wake up, it's like 2 a.m.
What are we doing?
You don't want to like go out into the street.
Yes,
and pee.
I understand that.
I just pop open the lid of my pee jar, pee in it, puts the lid back on, and slide it back out of sight.
Oh, Lord.
The pee jar is full right now. I actually need to toss it and get a new one.
Be careful in accepting lemonade at Dean's van, by the way.
So you don't reuse the jar?
I mean, it's basically just like a gallon jug of water that I've repurposed as a pee jar.
And if you wake up in the middle of the night and have to go the other one,
I've not incurred that since I was like 6 years old. So.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's positive. Good for you.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been going well. There hasn't been any emergencies. I'm trying to think of maybe like the worst situation I've run into in the van. And honestly, I can't think of anything bad that's happened. I hurt my arm really bad when I was in Wyoming. I thought that I broke it, but I mean, I just had like a big...
I've been staring at that scar for a while.
Yeah, I got a big gash. Oh, I'm still honestly convinced that I broke my arm and I just heal like a superhuman, like Wolverine does from
that's
X-Men.
Fun to think about.
No, you guys are laughing, but I'm serious about that. I swear, you guys should have seen this. I fell. We were glissading down some snow and I...
You were wetting down some snow?
Glissading, or it's just like you just like ski on your feet. You know, like you just slide on your feet, and it was like a steep snowfield and you're up in the mountains. And so like, if you fall down that, you slide down into some rocks, and I fell and I was like on my stomach and I slid into some rocks, and my brother was down there at the bottom waiting for me. And he caught me, and I go, oh, like I hit my arm. And I show my arm, and he goes, dude, I can see your bone in your arm right now. And we're at like 13,000. We're literally at the peak of the mountain, 13,000 feet. And so I had to take my shirt off, and I tied my shirt off and put pressure on the wound, so I didn't like bleed out. And I was like looking at it I should get stitches. I know I should get stitches, but I don't want to get stitches. Like, who the hell wants to go to the, especially I was like, I'll get stitches tomorrow if it still hurts. And it still hurt really bad. But then at this point I was like, well, I'm already a day in, I might as well just keep letting it heal itself. And I didn't have any range of motion in my arm for probably like 5 or 6 days. Like, I could only move my arm like 30 degrees, and there was just so much pain. And sleeping in the van, you know, it's like kind of cramped. And so I was like sleeping on my arm sometimes, and I'd wake up and it'd be like throbbing, and like the bandage would have fallen off and my arm's like sticking to my bed because the wound is healing to the sheets. So that was a bad couple days. But that was just because, again, I fell up in the mountains. That wasn't really anything that the van was responsible for,
I guess. Wow.
That whole trip I was with my dog. I took my dog with me, and I was in places like Nevada and Idaho and like these like pretty hot places.
Is your dog not always with you?
No. She lives in Pasadena with the girl that I got her with in college.
That's right. Okay.
And I was like, look, I just like want to travel with her and like give it a shot and see if we can do this. And so there was like, we were in like a lot of hot places like Nevada, like I said, and that was maybe challenging because she needed the AC on at all times or like not overheat. And like, let's say like I needed to go into a store and like buy something, and I was like shopping for like 45 minutes. I'd be like kind of, you know, trying to figure out what I could do with her.
Right. That's a challenge.
And especially in like Yellowstone National Parks, you're not allowed to bring dogs into national parks. Because of all the wildlife. And so I would like go climb the Grand Teton, and I would have to like board her for a couple of days while I was hiking, or I would go to Yellowstone and I would like venture out for the day and have to like leave her at the car, which was like, I never felt good doing it. So I think from this point forward, I'm not going to have the dog anymore, just because I feel like she's not living her best life with me. So that was an issue, a small issue. What else about the van life have I run into issues with? That's about it, honestly. I just rebuilt my garage system. I repurposed it, but I used to have these two big like bucket things that were on wheels that would slide out, and it was like very laborious and inefficient. And so I just got rid of those, and I put this big sliding track system in there. So the trunk just basically slides out, and like that's where all my cargo area is.
What do you keep in the cargo area?
Like camping equipment, chains in case it snows, my golf clubs, like all my like extracurricular stuff that I would need, warm clothes, extra blankets.
Well, I understand why you're getting so much screen time on Bachelor in Paradise, because I find you fascinating. I find the van fascinating. It's all fascinating.
Can we talk about my ability to heal incredibly fast?
I don't think that's a real thing, but I suffer from delusions like that
No, this is not a delusion, I swear. So I did it I fell on a Sunday, and my other brother was coming up that Friday for us to climb the Grand Teton, which is like a pretty difficult climb. It's not difficult, but it's long. It's like 14 miles, and there's like very serious moves that you have to do on the rock. And I'm like, well, I can't even like do a pull-up right now. And by Wednesday, I was like, I still don't even know if I can do this. I don't know if I'm physically capable of doing it because I still can't bend my arm. Thursday came around, and it was like getting better. And then Friday came, and I was like, it was probably like 75% healed. The gash was still there, obviously, but I had like 75% ability to use my arm. And I was like, well, I'm not going to not do the Grand Teton. Like, this is what my brother drove out from Denver for, 12 hours, whatever it took. And so I did it, and there's like a lot of points where it hurt really bad. But the moral of the story is now it's just a scar tissue. And this was a month ago, Mark and Easton. I had a hairline fracture in my arm.
You don't know that.
I know what I've broken my arm before. This was worse than that. And now it just is a badass scar that I have on my arm.
Trust me, no one would be more excited than Ethan and myself if you were actually a superhero.
I'm not saying I'm a superhero. I just say I possess superhuman capabilities.
Are there others other than the ability to heal slightly faster than a normal human?
No, but this is not the first time that I've healed irregularly fast.
Okay, there's a couple tests we can do for real. How easily do you get drunk?
Pretty. So I get drunk easily, but between getting drunk and getting drunk to the point of being sick is impossible. Okay.
Because those with healing factor, your Wolverines or Captain America's, people like that, they can't get drunk because their cells regenerate too fast to become intoxicated.
Yeah. I don't get drunk. I could drink all I want. No, I'm just kidding. As a kid, so I grew up with two older brothers, 1 6 and 1 9 years older than me. And as a kid, you know, obviously as a younger brother, I got picked on a lot and I got like bullied, like physically abused by my brothers, as any younger brother will do. Mm-hmm. And they would always say things like, oh, it's not leaving a bruise, or that didn't cut you. And so because of that, I can hurt you even more next time, you know? And I'm like, well, just because it's not bruising like you expect it to bruise doesn't mean it's not hurting like it's supposed to hurt. Mm-hmm. And so a regular forced punch on me would not leave a bruise, but a regular punch on someone else would leave like a big,
wow,
big bad bruise.
Wow.
So there you go, superhuman.
Maybe he is.
Maybe he is.
I'm convinced.
Anyways, what else? I used to think that I had x-ray vision as a kid, because if you hold something close enough to your face, you could see past it. But in reality, it's just both your eyes basically piecing it together. You know what I mean? And I would always like close one eye and be like, okay, I can see. I can't see through it now. And then I'd open both and I'd be like, ah, x-ray vision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a superhuman ability that I still have.
This is other stuff to discuss with a therapist, I think. It's all of the super abilities you think you have.
What else? What other super? That's about it.
Well, the ability to live in a van is impressive. And you also taught me a new word today.
Glissade.
Yeah.
Glissade. Oh, glissade.
I don't know. Glissade.
What is the textbook definition?
Slide down a steep slope of snow or ice with the support of an ice axe.
Yep.
So the picture is really funny on Google Images. It's just people sitting down in the snow.
Yeah. So the thing about the ice axe is it's imperative to have an ice axe when you're going through a snowfield while you're mountaineering. Because if you start slipping, as I did, you would basically turn over to your stomach and self-arrest and just dig the ice axe into the ice so you stop sliding. Otherwise, you can't stop yourself because it's so steep and so icy you can't stop. And we only had one ice axe because we were too lazy to go to the store and buy another one, which obviously. And my brother goes first. There was this move where we were on the rocks, and the only way we could get down was we had to jump from the rocks into the snowfield, which is at a decline. And then you had to like glissade down. And he did it without the ice axe because he's more of a mountain man than I am. So he went and did it and made it look easy. And I was like, F this. I don't need the ice axe. If he can do it without the ice axe, I can do it without the ice axe. And so I jumped, slid, my feet dug in too deep, and then I flipped over onto my stomach. And once you're on your stomach face forward, you're kind of screwed. And so that's how I hurt the arm.
Well, glissade and glissade are both acceptable pronunciations.
Thank you so much. That's good to know.
All right. Nicole is here.
Okay.
Jared is here.
Okay.
And Vanessa's ready for us.
Great.
Yep.
That was great. I just feel like we filled a lot of time with a whole lot of nothing. We're blowing a lot of smoke here.
That's actually the slogan for Help I Suck at Dating.
We're making mountains out of molehills. Okay, cool. Jared, good to see you. Vanessa, good to see you. We'll get you guys in a second. We're going to have Nicole as a guest as well. But before we do that, we're going to take one quick break.
All right, welcome to Help I Suck at Dating. Dean, Vanessa, and myself, Jared, we have a special guest in studio joining us, the author of Becoming Superwoman, a simple 12-step plan to go from burnout to balance, which is available in stores September 17th. Nicole Lapin.
What's up, guys?
Thank you for being here, guys. Nicole, thank you so much for being here.
Never leaving with a welcome like that. Thank you.
We will give you a standing ovation every time we see you. We promise you that much.
It means you just have to come back.
I will.
We weren't standing that time, so now we actually have
to. A sitting ovation.
Should we do it again?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. All right,
ladies and gentlemen, Nicole Lapin!
Yay! Thank you. Wow. You guys.
Almost fell out of my chair.
This is amazing. That's the best intro I've ever received in my whole entire life. I'll never forget my first standing ovation.
You know, we try here at Help I Suck at Dating. So Nicole, tell the entire audience who you are.
Who am I?
Who are you?
This is
who
so
are
deep.
You? What are you
who,
about?
What is happening?
I'm looking into your soul right now. Who
yes.
are you?
What do you see? Why don't you
a
tell me?
A powerful woman, that's what I say.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
A superwoman.
A superwoman.
A
but
hero.
You talk about killing superwoman.
Thank you. I do. I think Superwoman, the character who tries to be all things to all people, so she's nothing to herself, needs to die. We're kind of done with her. I think the idea of being a superwoman, like with this space, just being a super fucking Can I say
Say it.
Perfect. Is what we should aspire to. Somebody who puts her oxygen mask on first before helping others. Because if you're all things to all people, you're nothing to yourself. And therein lies the real danger.
If you're all things to all people, you're nothing to yourself. Can you elaborate
on that? Say that 10 times fast.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
I think that we get into this rhythm as women that we have to do it all. And I think, you know, the big question is, can we have it all? Right? I think we can have it all if we define what having it all means. We just can't do it all. We're human beings, not human doings. So we can't do all the things, especially not at once. And I think that pressure is leading women to burn out and break down in unprecedented levels.
Nicole, like I said earlier before we started recording, I'm so excited that you are with us today because my birthday's coming up. This is like, and I always say, like, September for me is the new year, like the new me, the new beginning, because that's my teacher brain speaking. And I feel like I'm at a point right now where I'm just kind of coasting. I'm doing everything, but I don't feel like I'm doing everything at 100%. And I totally relate to what you're saying. I totally relate to the idea of a burnout, because I have gone through one. I went my first burnout, I think I was 14 years old. I was in competitive gymnastics and I went through a burnout. I think I was a little bit depressed at the time too, and I needed to stop everything and just focus on what makes me happy. Because I think we have this idea of quote unquote what success is, right? And I think there's people who might look at either our lifestyles or people in the industry and say like, well, how could they be complaining and how can they be going through a burnout, or how could they, you know, need a mental health day when they have the life that everyone wants? So what would you say to people in that position?
Well, I think we have the equation wrong, right, Vanessa? And maybe it was during gymnastics or maybe it's now. Like, I'll be happy when I get there. Maybe it was a gold medal back in the day. You know, maybe it's an Oscar today, whatever it is. Then I'll be happy. Then I'll be balanced. And when you get there, there's always another there. Like, we keep with this goalpost all the time. Yep. Like, we get there, we get the salary, we get the job, and then all of a sudden, like, whabam, it's magically a whole other goalpost, and you never get your brain to the other side of balance or happiness. And studies show that it's actually the other way around, that happiness or balance will bring us more success and not vice versa.
It sounds like what you're saying is, if you're not enough with it, you'll never be enough without it.
Wow. Unpack that one.
Yep. Thank you. You can go ahead and
if you're not enough with it, you'll never be enough without it.
Actually, I said it wrong. If you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it.
That's oh, okay. That makes more sense. Yeah, I got it now. Sense.
Sorry.
No,
if you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it.
That's, I like it.
I do like that. It's kind of, I won't make the analogy. I was going to make a Spider-Man analogy. Good God, what's wrong with me? Anyway,
so
I digress. So what you're pretty much saying, it sounds like it's the journey, not the destination.
Well, I think self-care is the biggest asset or liability in your career. So I wrote Rich Bitch, I wrote Boss Bitch. Like, I talk about money and business to women all day, every day. And I think what I missed is that nothing is going to affect your career, networking your ass off, going to business school, then not having a good self-care regimen. When that's off, it can bring you to breakdown and rock bottom. When it's on point, it can actually bring you more success than you ever imagined.
When you say self-care, are you saying mentally, physically?
Yeah.
All-encompassing?
All of it.
Do you have any tips?
So many tips. I actually had a mental, emotional, physical breakdown after a burnout from my second book launch. And what I realized is that it's a lifetime of smoldering embers that finally caught fire and incinerated everything in its path, not some spontaneous combustion. I think if you go through trauma, if you have issues, I mean, I have more issues than Vogue. We all have stuff that we're dealing with. It will eventually kick your ass. I mean, I self-prescribed work for so many years and just hid from everything. And ultimately, it will come back and, you know, kick your butt.
Well, it sounds like a lot of the advice that you have to offer is pertaining to people in the workplace, right?
Or entrepreneurs. If you're, you know, in Boss Bitch, I talk about being a CEO of your family, being an entrepreneur. So being entrepreneurial within an existing company or starting your own business. And we go through a lot of different stages in our careers, especially now. It's not a ladder. I hate that analogy. It's more like a rope swing or like rock climbing or something like that. You're doing different things at different stages in your life, but you're the only constant no matter where you go.
So I think one issue a lot of people have is boundaries. How do you set boundaries? I feel like when I'm having like a really rough day and then I know a friend is calling me who loves to talk for hours, how do I set that boundary to be like, I'm just tired today. Let's catch up tomorrow. Instead, I'm such a giver. So I'll give everything that I got, and then I'll become more exhausted. So how, what kind of advice would you give to people who don't know how to set boundaries?
That's when I don't pick up the phone.
I don't know how to do that.
Oh, you just forward it to message. It's very easy. And then you text them, and then you say you're at the gym or you're getting food or something like that, and you'll call them later.
Or you could
just
be really honest.
That's the opposite of a boss bitch, Jared.
I know.
You could just say, like, listen, sister, you know, I got to put my oxygen mask on first right now. And Superwoman Shonda Rhimes, I quote in the book, says no is a complete sentence. Love her. Right?
Love her.
And saying no to other people, you have to reframe that, because that's often saying yes to yourself. And if you think about it, like, as a giver, I get it. And a lot of women, including yours truly, are givers. Like, I want to take care of other people. But if you say yes to something you put your half ass into and not your entire ass, then you're actually not being of service or of help to that other person. You're actually not doing justice to whatever that thing they asked you to do was that you said yes. So I say superwomen put their full ass into all the things, or they say no.
Yeah. I want to say I was just joking about not picking up the phone, guys. I hope everybody understood that. But what you were just saying, I need to practice what I preach as well, but a lot of times I think I don't value people enough for them to handle my opinion, if that makes any sense. Because like what you were saying, I think it's very difficult to say no, but at the same time, I think I should respect the other person to be able to handle the fact that I'm saying no. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and deal with what that feels like for you.
Like, it's very hard for me to say no. I'm sure everybody has this problem, right? You don't want to say no to someone because you feel so bad, but at the same time, I feel like I should respect that other person enough for me to know that they can handle me saying no. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you're not in charge of that other person. You're only in charge of yourself.
Like, yeah, but at the same time, you feel bad and you feel guilty and you want to help others as much as you possibly can, but you need to help yourself first, totally.
Yeah, you can't help anybody if you're crashing and burning yourself. And if you had like a date with yourself, I used to get into this cycle all the time. Like, I'd have a workout or whatever, and then I'd have a meeting opportunity that popped up and be like, I can totally do that meeting. And if I had a date instead with a friend for breakfast or lunch, I would think 500 times before canceling. Mm-hmm. But I would cancel in myself so easily. But instead, you have to think of that. Like, that's a date with yourself. You have something that's already on your calendar, and it's with you. Like, we're so easy to cancel on ourselves. We're so easy to put ourselves down. You know, the biggest enemy is between our ears. We talk so badly to ourselves all the time. You know, I'm in this whole kick now that when my girlfriends say, like, I'm so fat, or I'm like, I look terrible, or I'm the worst. I'm like, stop talking about my friend like that. And if somebody else talked about you like that, like, I would punch them in the face, or I'd gouge their eyes out. Like, you're not allowed to talk about you like that. You are my friend.
We could never be friends then. I'm sorry.
Don't put yourself down.
I'm very self-deprecating.
And Mark's the worst at that.
He's actually the best at it.
Well, yeah, he's a champ at being self-deprecating. That's an issue we deal with Dean all the time. He's incredibly charming, and he has the ability to make everybody feel loved except himself.
Aww.
Yeah, but there is some like deep underlying psychological issues there.
Like what?
Well, I don't know exactly what specifically.
Let's
otherwise
unpack it.
I would identify them and fix them. You know, like if my car was broken, I knew what was wrong with my car, I would fix it. But it's broken.
You're not broken.
I'm not broken. If I were a car, I would be broken. But as a human, I'm fully functioning. Anyways, the point that I was trying to say, to make, was that we would not be friends because you would be very critical of my self-deprecating humor all the time.
Or maybe I would be a great friend, and then we could get you to a better spot.
But I'm in a good spot. I like being self-deprecating. I enjoy it.
No, there's a time and a place for self-deprecation, but if it actually gets deeper to like you don't value yourself.
Oh.
I just did a social experiment when I had women come into a studio, and I had them list on a whiteboard the top five things they value. Mm. And none of them wrote themselves.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Like, think about it. What would you guys write down? Like,
what
would you value?
I would not have written myself either.
No, I don't think anyone of us. Anybody nope. in the studio would
know, though.
Dean?
I wouldn't write myself, although I am underlying all of the self-deprecation and all that stuff. I am one of the biggest egomaniacs, I think, that I possibly know. And so it's like a weird dichotomy between the two. But I think that people don't put themselves because they're trying to look outwardly, right? Like they're not like looking at themselves and saying, me, I value myself the most, which they should. But I think that they're just kind of looking outward more, right? I don't know.
I just think we were never taught that in school, right? To like, I think now it's starting to change. Our educational system is starting to change with like even emotional regulation and stuff like that. But growing up in elementary school, I was never taught how to love myself.
Totally. I mean, we learned the most bullshit things in school, like how to dissect a frog or how to do the Pythagorean theorem. Like, why do we need to know that in our lives? I have no idea.
Yeah, but I also think that helping others gives, like, for me, a satisfaction, a joy. And so that is somewhat selfish. So when I value other people, I guess I kind of do value myself a little bit just because I know that by doing good, it makes me feel better. So is that a selfish act?
Well, I don't think selfish is actually a criticism. That's a whole other topic. I think, for, especially for women, selfish is considered a criticism and selfless is considered a compliment. But part of the definition of selfish is actually having concern for your own desires and needs. And I don't think that's a criticism. Being selfless is having no concern for your own desires and needs. And I think that should be the criticism above everything else. So I think you can't pour from an empty cup. Like, it's all good to be of service to other people. And if that makes you feel good, like, mazel tov. But
I think it makes everybody feel good, right?
Yeah, but if you are first taken care of, like, you can't pour for an empty cup. I think that when you're depleted, you can't be of service to other people.
I also think people don't value themselves as much as they value other people, because as human beings, we, you know, as an individual, I know every thought that goes through my head. And I know every act that I do. And there are times where I am selfish. And there are times when I do things just for myself. And I think that knowing that as an individual and a human being, immediately I hate myself for that. Does that make sense? Even though you shouldn't. And I think everybody goes through this, because everybody's selfish at a point, right? You know, everybody does things for themselves. And so knowing that I do that already, I think it already gives me that thought of like, well, people are... It already makes me hate myself, if that makes sense.
You feel guilty?
Of course. How can you not? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that. I think growing up, I was someone who is, I am still such a giver. But I think once I decided to take charge and what my happiness looks like, and I still struggle with that every day. I still struggle with like really making time for myself. I haven't, before I went on the show, it's been 3 years that I've had a solid workout. And for me, that was linked so heavily to my mental health. I felt so good. I would eat better. I would be happier. And now I'm just like, oh, it's hard for me to wake up in the morning. It's hard for me to eat better because I, that part of my life, that puzzle piece is missing. And I just haven't found time for it. And that is such a big excuse. I think it's so easy to make excuses for yourself in life. And it takes a much stronger person to be determined to say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to stick by it for myself. Like you said.
Yeah, I mean, time is your most valuable asset. And I think people say you can't find time. Like, I found balance. Balance is a noun and a verb. It's like not hiding under the couch. It's not a game of hide and seek. It's not like you find it and you peace out and you're done. It's a, I use it as a verb because it's something you constantly have to work on every day. So like prioritizing your workout or your gratitude journal or random acts of kindness or community, like all of these things have been proven scientifically to contribute to your well-being and to happiness. Like, I always go back to the data and the facts, not the woo-woo stuff. And like, I'm not saying don't be a giver and don't develop community, because that's actually one of the biggest telltale signs of successful people, that they have developed relationships and cultivated them, but not at the expense of yourself. I mean, think about like dating too. Like, hello, I totally suck at dating. This is a part of my life that I have not figured out. But I know that like, if I don't have my own going on, like, I'm not going to be a partner. You guys, I'm assuming, don't want somebody who's like all about the other person. I mean, for so many years, I would say, well, when I get married or when I find somebody, then I'll go on this trip. Then I'll have that adventure. And then I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And then I was tired of waiting. And I just went on the adventures by myself. I went to a movie by myself. I was like, this is the raddest thing ever.
What movie?
How did I not do that? The first movie I saw by myself was The Glass Castle, because nobody wanted to see it with me. And I was like, I really love this memoir and I want to go see it. So I just went by my damn self.
The first movie I ever saw by myself was Superman Returns. Nobody wanted to go see it with me. So I went opening day at 11 a.m. first showing.
Not surprised in the slightest.
Yeah. Anyway, moving forward.
It's very on brand for this conversation.
Yeah.
You can be a Superman too.
But you should kill Superman, right? Or like for you...
I think it's this fictitious idea that we, especially as women, and I had to choose women, but all the advice is for everybody. I think when you're writing books, you have to just pick your audience. You can't be all things to all people. But the advice is for men or for women. And it's this ideal that we're, you know, trying to live up to something that is unattainable. Like, we've leaned so far into everything, Vanessa, that I think women in particular are just falling over. Like, we're comparing ourselves to the best versions of each aspect of our lives. So like in our fitness regime, we compare ourselves to like the fitness blogger that has the, you know, works out 500 hours, you know, a week. I don't think that's possible, but whatever. Or we compare our, you know, being a mom to some home you know, some woman who makes bread and homeschools her kids. Then we compare our business life to like some CEO of a multi-billion dollar company, and they don't have the same responsibilities that we do, but we try to be the best at each of those things, and that's crushing us.
Right. And now it's worse than ever because we can tap into everyone's life and feel like we're a part of it, and then really feel like we can compare ourselves through social media, Instagram, the pictures, the it's so hard. And I relate to that too. And I think people think, you know, they look at someone's lifestyle. I remember when I was single, I'm like, oh, I would look at a married couple and be like, oh, they have the perfect relationship. Or I would look at something that that I didn't have. And then at one point I'm like, what if they're looking at my single lifestyle and thinking like, oh, I wish I were single, or oh, I wish I had that too. So that's when I started really appreciating the life that I have, and taking advantage of it. One question that I do have, though, which is hard for me to do, is to, I feel like I'm really good at sensing people's energies, but it's sometimes hard for me to like avoid having toxic people in my life. What kind of advice can you give to someone like me who's like, that person is toxic? Make sure that you do set that boundary so that they don't, you know, put on that negative energy onto your life.
It's true. I actually had to go through my whole friend list, and friend breakups are harder than breakups in a lot of cases. But I really had to say, just because we have history together, like, and you're draining my energy.
But you're not actually telling your friend, sorry, we're not hanging out anymore, right? Or are you just kind of like ghosting them as a friend?
Yeah, I have a whole plan in the book, actually, of sometimes like you actually have to say something, and sometimes you trail off and you're protecting yourself.
Because I'm going through this phase right now where, I mean, it's not really the same thing, but in a sense it is. I'm unfollowing a lot of people on Instagram that aren't like motivating me to do the things that I want to be doing. If I haven't talked to you in a long time, and we don't, I'm still following Jared.
I'm checking my phone right now.
I'm unfollowing many, many people because they're not adding any value to my life, and we don't talk regularly. So there's no point in me continuing to keep up with their life, right? So do you think it's important for me to reach out to them and be like, hey, I'm unfollowing you?
No, I don't think we need to have that conversation.
So that's what you're saying. Sometimes it's necessary to have that conversation.
Yeah, if they confront you and they're like, yo.
So I've been confronted by multiple people. They say, hey, why'd you unfollow me on Instagram? And I always say, I'm sorry, I guess it must have been a glitch in the app or something. I'll refollow you. Because I'm so unconfrontational that I don't want to be like, I don't know, I just wasn't interested in the stuff that you were posting anymore. I don't know. What is your advice on that?
I mean, I would just say, like, I'm using my Instagram primarily for work right now, and I hope you're well or whatever. You know, I don't think you need to lie necessarily about it. And most of the stuff that you probably do on social media is for work.
It is. But it's also, it's like, I still follow friends. I always just say, oh, I'm only following travel and dog accounts right now. So I'm not following any human accounts.
I think we feel like we have a responsibility to certain people, you know, for a variety of reasons. Yeah. And studies have shown that you need 2 out of 3 things to maintain relationships. So shared history. So like if you grew up together or if you went through something traumatic together, common interests. So if you like the same things, and also an equality in the relationship. So somebody is not a mooch. Hmm. If you only have one of those things, that's not for a sustainable relationship. So you actually have to ask yourself if you have more than one of those things. And if you don't, then cut people to the curb. I mean, time is your most valuable asset. You can always get more money. You cannot get more time.
Yeah, that's so hard, though. I mean, I guess when it comes to friends, and not that it might be easier, but if you're working a 9-to-5 job and you're with people who are toxic, how do you get rid of them? Or how do you distance yourself from people who you're not compatible with at work?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's important to have like work homies too that elevate you. And if somebody is a drag on your time, I mean, it's case by case dependent, but I went through, so when I had this total breakdown, I needed to rethink basically everything, and everything we've been told as cliche, I had to go back and say, like, is this actually applicable to me? So I listed it by city, and I came up with, you know, my notebook, and I literally wrote down, like, here are the people who are good influences in my life in LA, in New York, and I would like stick to the list, because in a time of, you know, clarity, I wrote down that list of people who elevate me, are contributing to, you know, my betterment of my career, or my, you know, share my morals or values or whatever. And then like in a time of weakness where they're, you know, tugging at me, I go back and I'm like, were they on the list when I was like in this really good space? And then I cross-check that.
Well, Nicole, I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us today. You were quite a pleasure
thank
to have
you.
In studio.
Likewise, guys. Do I get another clappy thing?
Yes, another clappy
thing. Whoa. Let's go. She's
we're
asking
handing
for it.
These
we can't
out
just
like
be handing them
cookies.
Out. Exactly.
Yeah. We'll give you one. I'll give you a clappy thing.
We'll give you one, but not because you're asking for it. We're going to give it to you because you deserve it.
Well, thanks.
But before we do that, let's talk about your book that you just published.
Great. Let's talk about
Becoming Superwoman.
Yes. So where it's a simple 12-step plan to get to go from burnout to balance.
Where can we find it if we want to go?
First step, you guys already did.
Which is having you on the podcast?
Yes.
Oh, okay. No, talking.
Admitting you have a problem.
Well, that's the first step to solving
every
any problem,
recovery.
Right?
Yeah. All the books are 12-step plans. So yeah, you can get it wherever books are sold.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
All the places.
Make sure you're wearing your wedding ring. That's where you lost your wedding ring in New York.
Barnes & Noble.
Oh, should we talk about the right-handed wedding ring that I bought myself?
Oh.
Good
for you.
Is
it like a promise ring?
Thanks, babe. Yeah, I got in a fight with my ex, and I just like walked over to the jewelry store, and I went into the wedding section, and I was like, oh, I'll take that one. They're like, you're getting married? I'm like, yep, to myself. Here's my own credit card.
To myself.
So Becoming Superwoman on shelves now. Is it via available on audiobook?
It is. I read the whole audiobook. Like, whoa. I never wanted to hear the sound of my voice ever.
How long did that take you?
A week. Boss Bitch took like a week and a half. It was longer. Rich Bitch took about a week too.
Wow.
So for the listeners out there, if you're enjoying this beautiful voice you're hearing on this podcast and you want to get more of it, Becoming Superwoman and Boss Bitch, both available in audiobook.
And Rich Bitch. I'm in the iHeart family now. Hello. Yeah. Wait, Hush Money just launched.
Plug it right now.
Hush Money. Continue.
Hush Money. Yeah. My co-host is the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, Jason Pfeiffer. Okay. And so, yeah, we debate taboo topics that nobody wants to talk about money. And then we bring in a celebrity
judge. Give us one taboo topic.
Who pays on a first date?
Ooh. Who do you think pays on a first date?
We talk about that a lot.
Do you lend your friends money?
Do you lend your friends money? That's a good one. That's a hard one.
They're all hard questions, and nobody wants to talk about that.
Depends on the friend.
Do you share your salary?
With your significant other?
So many different.
Well, how about this? Are you and Ashley merging your bank accounts now that you're married?
Yep.
Yes.
Another good question. Do you have a secret?
Is that a personal question? Should I answer
that? That is a personal question, but I think that's the right move.
Do you get a prenup? Do you get a
Should
post-up?
We have a secret account as women?
Yes.
Whoa. What do you mean a secret? Whoa. What do you mean a secret account as women?
Yep. Have your own back.
Secrets.
Yep. Should a man have a secret account?
If you want to have a secret account, I'm just talking to my girls.
Secrets are no fun. Secret secrets hurt someone.
Yeah, secrets don't make friends, people, okay?
Yeah, but also they don't pay the bills.
How about Instagram, Twitter? You're on all those things, I assume, right?
Yeah, wherever you can find social media or books, I am there at Nicole Lappin.
At Nicole Lappin. That's
making
the pleasure of having a unique full name.
Yep.
You can get the handle of just your name.
And it's spelled, dating the Twitter founder.
And the last name is spelled Lappin. Lappin.
Wait a minute, really? You dated the founder of Twitter?
All right, guys. See you later. So thanks for
you should have
the ex you got to a fight with and you bought the wedding ring about?
That's really amazing.
Oh, we're getting dirt now.
Thanks.
Don't say too much. Love you might unverify you on Twitter.
I know. Don't do it. But again, guys, Nicole Lappin, you can check out her book, Becoming Superwoman, A Simple 12-Step Plan to Go From Burnout to Balance, available September 17th in bookstores and audiobooks. So go check it out.
Yay.
Nicole, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Round of applause.
Yeah, to you guys too.
Hey, welcome back to Help I Suck at Dating. And we have two very special guests that are on the phone right now. You know him from his hit show, Catfish, and their new show, We Need to Talk, which is from Attention. It is now on Facebook Watch, Season 4. We have Neve Schulman and Laura Perlongo. Yay! Hey.
You've also got Bo and Cleo Schulman here, who might chime in from time to time.
Now, Bo and Cleo are your two kids, correct?
That's right.
Congratulations. And who's the youngest? You just had a baby this past year, correct?
That's right. We have an 8-month-old Bo and an almost 3-year-old daughter, Cleo.
Wow. Congratulations, guys. That's incredible. Neve, I mean, yeah, I know you guys are promoting We Need to Talk right now, which, like I said, is on Facebook Watch. What kind of generated the show from the start? Why did you want to do this?
So I had been working with Attention for years. The guys who started it are friends of mine. And I was just really excited that they were making videos that were obviously socially driven and, you know, with the intention of helping raise awareness about issues that needed to be talked about. And my wife and I, before we were married, when she first got pregnant, decided to make a video about how sorely companies in America need to improve their parental leave policies. And that video did so well that we started making more videos together as a couple, and people seemed to really respond to us together, and we just really enjoyed working with each other, so we kind of developed this idea of how do we help people in relationships kind of figure their way through being single, being in a relationship, breaking up, and all this sort of stuff in between.
Well, that's incredible. And now you guys, it's about, it's like a 6-minute video podcast that you can watch on Facebook, right? Where you guys answer questions, you give advice, you talk about relationships, you talk about your own relationship.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. People call in and ask us just about anything. And we usually don't have one answer, but several answers, different approaches to things. It's funny because Neve and I often disagree on the best route to solving common relationship problems. Like, I say it's okay to ghost.
You say
really?
It's okay to ghost.
Definitely. It's a modern world. It's a modern world.
Also, I'm a big fan of staying friends with your exes, where Laura is not as good at that. Now, that just might be because her exes don't want to be friends with her.
But, Neve, are you friends with your exes?
I am, with the exception of one. I've remained very friendly with my long-term exes. You know, not the short-term ones, but meaningful relationships.
So we've talked about that on the podcast before, and some have said that there's a bit of like narcissism that goes, because I'm the same way as you, Neve. I believe it's important to stay friendly with your exes, but some people believe you're wanting to do that, or your willingness to do that is because like you need that own vindication in yourself.
You're holding them back. Move on. Leave them alone.
No, I disagree. I think that it's my exes hold the key to many of my own deep, dark secrets. So I want them on my side. I want them to like me. They're not inspired to, you know, potentially reveal things about me that they might know.
Keep your friends close. Keep your enemies closer.
Exactly.
Type thing.
But Laura, would you be friends with Neve's exes too, or is it, how does that work?
It's a little weird. I don't hang out with them. I'm just like, once in a while, we'll communicate via email, or hey, how you doing, or congrats on your new kid, or whatever, stuff like that.
Reply to a story or something on Instagram.
Make sure they know that you're always thinking about them.
The real question is, Laura, would you be friends with me if we broke up?
Ooh, yeah.
I would have to, I think.
I guess that's
kids,
true.
You sort of have
the kids.
To.
The kids add a wrinkle in the design.
Yes.
The kids, the business adds all types of wrinkles in there.
That's right.
I'm surprised to hear that Laura says that ghosting is an okay thing to do in 2019, because obviously everyone's on their high horse and they say, no, you should never ghost. You should provide closure for both parties. But you said you think it's a good thing.
I just think there's way too much responsibility on people now with social media to like maintain all these relationships and make sure everyone feels okay. And it's just a lot of energy that you're using on things that shouldn't matter anymore.
Well, I think that really just depends on how many relationships you're in.
Right, that's true. But I'm saying like after a date or two, a casual ghost is okay. If you've been dating for a few months, that would be kind of messed up.
I agree. And I
don't think you owe someone anything after a couple dates. All right, didn't work out, move on.
I think some people deserve to be ghosted. There are some weird people out there that you can go on a date with that just act weird, and they just deserve to never hear from you
again. You want to give them as little information about you as possible.
Yeah.
I agree.
So what else are you guys working on? You've got Catfish, obviously, going on.
7 seasons. That is incredible. Neve, when you started Catfish, could you ever imagine it would have taken off and become such a pop culture phenomenon as it is now?
Definitely not. But almost more astounding to me is this is by far the longest I've ever held a job.
Nice.
So I'm just amazed that almost 8 years later, I'm still working on the same thing. I impress myself even sometimes to think that I've managed to keep this thing going.
We say the same thing about Dean with this podcast.
I literally was just about to say.
I knew you guys. I wanted to beat you.
That's one of the most refreshing things I think I've heard all day. Well, but you were originally, correct me if I'm wrong, so there was a documentary on catfishing that you were the central point focus of, right? And then spun that off, and then you became the host of the show, Catfish.
That's right. So essentially, I got Catfish before that's what it was called.
Yeah.
My brother made a documentary about it, which we didn't know was going to turn into a thing, but it did. And we called it Catfish, not even expecting that would then get turned into the word to describe the sort of act of fake profile creation. But it did. And then people just started reaching out to me with all their weird, wild, creative stories. And I just didn't know we sort of responded by saying, all right, well, people need help with their situations. Maybe we can make a show.
So you're saying that your brother is the one that coined the term catfish?
Well, I mean, technically we all did, all of us who were part of the film.
I'm curious the origins. Why catfish?
So in the documentary, when we were essentially, without giving it away, because you obviously haven't seen it and you should, not because it has anything to do with me, just because I think it's a really beautiful film. But I thought I was talking to this young woman who I was falling in love with and her whole family. And when I got finally to Michigan to meet them and discover the truth, we ended up talking to a few other people involved, including the husband of the woman who was involved. And he told us a story about fishermen using catfish in vats, in these giant tanks under their ships, while they were spending weeks at sea to chase the codfish that they were catching around to keep them moving and agile and their sort of flesh tasty well, whatever. And so in life, he says, there are people like that who are catfish who kind of keep us all guessing and keep us on our toes and sort of nipping at our fins, if you will. And so it was sort of meant to be a beautiful metaphor for those who you might call rule breakers or people who, you know, draw outside the lines or think outside the box.
Gotcha.
Little did you know that was going to be the word shouted at you as you walked down the street.
Yeah.
Hey, catfish.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of turned the, it's like the name of modern dating, you know, because now there's so many different names. Like we talked about ghosting, breadcrumbing, all these different meanings, these different words now have taken on so many different definitions in the modern dating world. And it really all originated with catfish. So you, my friend, have made your staple on the history of the world.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, it's even in the dictionary.
So, Laura, let me ask you, have you ever been catfished or have you ever been ghosted? Because I'm curious now with your ghosting take, if you've ever been ghosted.
I've never been ghosted, but I've ghosted a plenty. Have I ever been catfished? You know, I think we were all catfishing and catfished on like early internet, you know, chat rooms on AIM. You would go on and you'd say ASL and you'd lie and be like, I'm 16 when you were like 11.
Yeah. 100%.
That's what my entire childhood has been catfishing.
That's a very funny way of looking at it because you're spot on. I've definitely pretended to be someone else in chat rooms many times as a kid, just bored and having fun. You know?
I know. As a kid, you do so many dumb stuff.
But also, technically,
I think we judge these people, but like, everyone knows it's the most fun you can have.
Have you ever been on? I used to go on. Now my mind is blanking. It was the Misconnections.
Craigslist?
Craigslist, thank you. Good Lord.
Yeah.
You ever go on those?
I don't know, but they're sad to read.
I guess you only go to look if you feel as though you've had one.
So wait, you went on and you had one?
No, somebody introduced me to this and was like, have you ever heard of mixed connections on Craigslist? And they would just read through them in these poor people who just thought they saw the love of their life pass by them at a grocery store would go on this Misconnections on Craigslist and say, if the woman who is at Stop and Shop 1 p.m. yesterday was wearing a blue shirt, saw me, please respond to this because I think that we had a strong connection. Like, it's just so heartbreaking, but also addicting to read.
I know. And I mean, if I'm being honest, I probably have like a dozen Misconnections every day. I mean...
You might have one right now and you don't even know it.
No, I don't mean people wanting to connect with me. I every time I walk down the street, I think, oh, that person's cute.
Oh my God, me.
If that's not a good enough tease for everybody to tune in, we need to talk on Facebook. I don't know what is. So do you guys have one common question that people always ask you about relationships that you see reoccurring?
I think the biggest question people are asking is, should I end it? But that could be also just a plethora of issues that come up. But people are just really are unsure of themselves when it comes to continuing a relationship or ending it.
And so, Niamh, do you think that your background with catfish, do you think that's hurt or helped your relationships? I'm curious about that.
It's funny. I think being in a position to discuss just, you know, because we obviously the show is sort of based on online relationships that have some element of mystery to them. But the actual dating part is minimal when you
kind of get to the core of what the show is, which is just like people talking about how they feel. And so I think on one hand, it's definitely improved my listening skills because I do my best to hear what these people have to say. And in the moment, the very little time, understand, interpret, and offer some sort of advice or something that might be helpful. But yeah, I mean, I think it's made me just a better person, which I think in turn makes me a better person in relationship.
If nothing else, more honest, maybe.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing too. You go through all this kind of like this weird stuff, especially being catfished and then it becoming so public and then hosting the show. I'm sure, especially as a host, what you see most is people being dishonest, which only in turn makes you want to be more honest in your own personal life.
Yes and no. I mean, but if I'm being honest now, I think being famous makes me a better person because nowadays, if you're famous, like you can't do anything wrong without someone knowing or seeing or taking a picture or video. Like you can't flirt online because someone's going to screenshot. Like, so now I'm on the straight and narrow because I have to be.
Right.
And I want to be.
There's a quote that I like that I heard recently. It says, act so you can tell the truth about how you act. And if you're famous, people obviously always know how you act. And so it just kind of...
You're held to it.
You're held to it.
Exactly.
Or on the flip side of that, I mean, granted, I don't know what it's like to be famous or anything like that, but you could just act like a shithead and get away with it or whatever you want, you know?
Well, you either have to go full shithead, like and totally lean into it and just be that.
Yeah.
Or you have to be a saint and not... And if you make one mistake, you know, hope that you're... fans will stay, you know, will get your back.
I took the route of just moving into a van and hoping for the best. And it's actually exactly. Worked out pretty well for me so far, to be honest.
yeah, stop stealing bread, Neve.
So Neve and Laura too, tell us more about where we can find you guys to watch the show because it's airing right now, right? Season four is on Facebook Live, right?
So that's right. So yeah, you can find the page for the show We Need to Talk by just searching for We Need to Talk on Facebook. We're also on there if you want to find our pages.
Yeah.
And we're posting new episode every Friday, I think, and the first one just went up.
And where else can we find you guys? Obviously Instagram, Twitter, all that kind of stuff, I would assume.
Oh yeah, of course. Snapchat. Although Laura uses Snapchat a lot more than I do.
TikTok.
Yeah, if you love mom content, my Snapchat's where to go.
Tell me you guys don't have TikTok. Do you have TikTok?
TikTok. Oh yeah, we don't really use TikTok, but we should probably get on.
No, I keep hearing everyone's always like TikTok's the future. TikTok's the younger demo. And every time I hear that, I just think to myself, there is no a chance in Snowflake's chance in hell I ever get on TikTok.
No, I tried. I created the username just so I would have it.
Yeah,
but I can't honestly cannot. I feel like a grandparent when I go on there because I have no idea how to use it.
Exactly. I'm 28 years old and I feel the same exact way. I feel like I don't belong. Thank you guys so much for calling in and joining us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We will be sure to check in on the We Need to Talk show on Attention on Facebook Watch.
Yep.
And we're looking forward to seeing more from you guys. Like you said,
thanks so much for having us.
You guys got something special, so we're looking forward to more, and we'll talk to you soon.
Neve, Laura, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye,
guys. Well, there you go.
Dude, Neve's awesome. I love their energy. I will admit I have not seen We Need to Talk. I'm going to go binge watch all four seasons right now because they're captivating to listen to. Even right off the bat, she's like, I think you should ghost people. And he's like, I think you should be friends with your ex. And I'm like, I love them both. They're just so raw and honest.
I've never seen We Need to Talk. I've never seen the documentary that Neve was on, but I've seen quite a few episodes of Catfish.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Neve. And it's funny to be able to talk to him now. I wish I wish we had more time, or maybe we had him to come into the studio. I feel like that would be a lot of fun.
I wish he was in studio. I wish they were both in studio.
You want to know what would be funny, actually, is if him or his PR people would set up like in-person interviews, and then showing up to the interview would be someone completely different. He would catfish interviews. I think that
Why are you not his publicist?
I know.
This needs to happen now, Neve, on a big stage.
Neve, if you're listening to this, and honestly, why wouldn't you be? Do that and give me 50%.
Like on Live with Kelly and Ryan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like a big stage like that.
And they like hype up his entrance a whole bunch.
Neve Schulman! Yeah, yeah. And out walks Dean from Paradise.
Nice.
And he's like, no, I'm Neve, guys. What are you talking about?
That would be very funny.
That'd be fantastic. Genius, Dean.
Anyways, that'll do it for this week's episode of Help, I Suck at Dating. Big thank you to everyone involved. Vanessa, Jared, Neve, Laura, Nicole. Wow, we had a lot of people in today. Thank you to our sponsors as well. We couldn't be here without you, but most importantly, we couldn't be here without the listeners. So thank you to you guys. B, Be sure to tune in next week where we're going to be recording live from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Las Vegas. What happens in Vegas never stays in Vegas. Don't believe that.
Especially when you record a podcast, because then it just gets broadcast to the entire world. We look forward to that. We are going to talk about things and stuff that you're not going to want to miss.
Cool story, bro.
Anyways, be sure to tune in then, because maybe we'll suck a little bit less.
Follow Help by Suck at Dating with Dean, Vanessa, and Jared on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.